"Nothing that I can think of," replied Joseph. "Let it content you that you have delivered hers, and leave it to me to consider it."
"As you will," said the dwarf, "but I can add still a little, for the mistress let fall that she would walk today at sunset in the garden for the comfort of her lovely spirit, and mount the slope into the secluded garden-house, there to commune with her thoughts. If there were someone who would have speech with her to make a report or prefer a request, he should take advantage of the rare opportunity to present himself for audience."
This was simply a lie on Dudu's part. The mistress had said nothing of the sort. But if Joseph fell into the snare, he would lure her to the summer-house by turning the tail the other way about, thus contriving a rendezvous between them. And though Joseph did not rise to his hint, yet the dwarf did not relinquish his purpose. Joseph, indeed, made no sign of intending to avail himself of the suggestion he had heard, simply turning his back on the guardian of the wardrobe without more ado. His heart beat high, though not so quickly as it had before, having by now caught up with itself. And it would be idle to deny that he was glad almost to rapture at what he had heard about the mistress, as likewise at the opportunity which awaited him at the setting of the sun. We may guess that an insistent inner voice warned him not to go. Nor need it surprise us that presently an outward whisper, like a cricket's chirp, reinforced the inward one. For when, after leaving Dudu, he had made for the house to consider these matters in the special room of trust, it was Sa'ank, Wen Nofer, and so on, it was Shepsis Bess, in his wrinkled finery, who slipped in with him and murmured, "O Sarsif, do not that which the wicked advise you. Do it not now or ever." "What, little friend, are you there?" he asked, rather confused, and asked him in what crack or cranny he had crept, that he could know what Dudu said. "In none at all," responded the little man. "But my dwarf eyes are sharp, and from afar I saw you bend down to him after you had chidden him for the hand over his mouth. Then knew I whose name he had whispered." "A wizard you are indeed," answered Joseph, "and are now slipped hither to congratulate me on the turn affairs have taken. For here was my enemy, who has so long complained of me to the mistress, and she sends him to me with the plain meaning that I have at last found favor in her eyes, and she covets to speak with me about the affairs of the household. Confess now that it is a marvelous turn, and rejoice with me that I may, if I choose, have audience with her today in the garden-house at sunset, for I myself rejoice beyond all words. Mind, I do not say that I purpose to go. I am far from having made up my mind. But that I may go, that the choice rests with me to go or stay, that rejoices me unspeakably. And you too, Thumbling, shall wish me joy." "Ah, O Sarsif," sighed the little man, "if you had in mind not to go, your joy would be less. That, to my little wisdom, is a sign that you will go. Shall the dwarf rejoice with you over that?" "Small wisdom, is it, as you say?" scolded Joseph. "And in this case, your piping and plaining serve me not at all. Can you not grant it to a son of man to be glad of his free choice, in such a matter that he had no thought ever to be able to rejoice at it? Only think back with me to the time, the day, and the hour, when the man who is now departed bought me for the master, and the bargaining was done by the scribe Kamat with my father of the well, the old man from Midian, and we stood thereafter alone in the courtyard, I, you, and your ape, do you recall? Then did you whisper to me as I stood there dazed and said, 'Fling yourself on your face.' Then my unknown mistress rode past, lifted high and proud on the shoulders of rubber-eaters, the mistress of the house into which I was sold, and her lily-white arm hung down from the chair, as I saw from between my fingers. She looked upon me with contemptuous seeing, as though I were not a man but a thing, while I, a boy, gazed up as though at a goddess, blinded with awe. But God brought it about by His will that I grew up in this house and flourished as by a spring for these 7 years long, till I fell heir to the office of the ailing man and came to the headship. So the Lord my God glorified Himself in me. There was but one cloud in the mirror of my fortune, and in one part dross mingled with its bronze. The mistress was against me, with Beknekens, the priest of Amun, and Dudu, the married dwarf. I must rejoice when she frowned upon me, for black looks are better than none. But now, lo! Is it not the consummation of my good fortune? Is it not now, for the first time free from dross, that her brow has lightened, and she sends me word of her relenting, and even of her desire for speech with me in special audience? Who could have dreamed, at the hour when you whispered to the boy, "Fling yourself on your face," that one day it would lie with him to choose or not to choose to have speech with her? Then take it not amiss of me, my friend, if I rejoice. Ah, O Sarsif, be glad, but after you have resolved not to see her, not before. Begin not each sentence with ah and alas, little wizened one, instead of with oh, as in wonder and rejoicing. Why do you croak like a raven and spin gloomy fancies? I told you that I was more inclined not to go to the summer-house. But even so, it must be thought of, for after all it is the mistress who is sent. Or rather, one might say that in the first place it is she, and that makes it important. In my place a man must keep his head and be cool and worldly. Such a man must be mindful of his advantage, and not fear to take opportunity by the forelock, that he may strengthen himself. Consider how much a bond with the mistress and a nearness to her person can advance me, and be a prop to me in the house. But on top of that, tell me, who am I to pass judgment on the mistress's wish and command? True, I am set over the house, but I belong to the house. I am the bought servant of it, whereas she is the chief and true wife, lady of the house, and I owe to her obedience. There could be nobody among the living or the dead to blame me were I to fulfill her bidding in blind loyalty. Even the dead and living might blame me, did I otherwise, for plainly I had risen too early to command, had I not first learned to obey. So I begin to ask myself whether you were not right to chide me for my joy in the free choice, for perhaps I have no such, and no other course is left me but to go. Ah, O Sarsif, came the whispering little voice, how can I answer aught but ah and alas when I hear you speak and utter such quibbling with your tongue? You were good, you were lovely and wise when you came to us, O seventh gift, and I spoke for you and your purchase against the evil old gossip, because with my unclouded little wisdom I saw at first glance the power and the blessing. Beautiful you are still, and good at heart, but of the other, better be silent. Is it not a calamity to hear you thinking on past times? Wise you were till now, unerring in shrewdness. Your thoughts went like the arrow. Your head was blithely erect as you walked in the service of your mind. Then came the fiery bull, which I fear more than aught else in the world, and breathed one breath in your face. And you are grown foolish, that God may pity you, and like an ass which one drives round the town with cudgelings, for your thoughts go on all fours, while your tongue hangs out, serviceable no longer to your mind, but to your evil proneness. Ah, alas, and woe to your ignominy! For all that you say is but beating the air. It is but crooked conclusions and subterfuge, betraying the bondage of your mind to the yearning to go on all fours. Even would you pull the wool over the eyes of your little faithful here, saying that he was right to rebuke you for your joy in free choice, because in fact you have none. As though it is not just therein you should find your true joy. What a shame is that! What a boundless shame and mortification! Here the dwarf put his two little hands before his wrinkled face and began to weep. Nay, nay, little gnomeling, said Joseph in distress. Take heart, weep no more. It goes to my heart to see you so low, and all because of some false conclusions that have crept into our talk. You may well find it an easy thing to draw the right ones and guide yourself by the spirit, yet you must not suffer such pathetic distress over one whose mind is somewhat clouded by the proneness to err. Now you are good again, said the little man, still sobbing. He dried his eyes on his crumpled batiste skirt. You pity my tears. Alas, that you have no pity on yourself, to hold upright your reason with all your strength, that it fail you not when you have most need. Lo, from the beginning have I seen it come, when you would not understand, and pretended ignorance when I whispered. I saw that much worse could unfold itself from the complaints of that evil man, when he complained before Moot, the mistress, something much more dangerous than that danger. For thinking to do you ill, he did more ill than he knew, opening her eyes to you, you good and lovely one. And you, will you now close your own eyes before the opening pit, that is deeper far than the other of your tale, whereinto you were thrown after your envious brethren had snatched your wreath and veil? No Ishmaelite from Midian will be there to draw you up from this pit, which the bad man digged when he opened the eyes of the mistress to your beauty. Now she, the exalted one, makes eyes at you, and you return her glances, and they are the terrible glances of the fiery bull that lays waste the fields, and after them comes naught but ashes and darkness.
Fearful are you by nature, dear manling, Joseph answered him, and you torture your small soul with dwarfish imaginings. But tell me what it is you see in your weakness only because Our Lady has let her eyes rest upon me. When I was a little lad, I thought that everyone who saw me must love me more than himself. So foolish was I. It brought me to the pit. But I have climbed out of the pit and overcome my folly. Yet that folly, methinks, has descended upon you and whispers fears. As yet, the mistress has looked but sternly upon me, nor I upon her save with reverence. If she will speak with me, and hear reports upon the business of the house, shall I interpret that according to your conceit of me? Not flattering is that conceit, for it assumes that I am lost, were the mistress but to hold out her little finger to me. I myself have no such fear, nor think to come again so swiftly to the pit. If now I would challenge your fiery bull, do you think I am so ill-armed, and cannot take him by the horns? Verily, you imagine me to be of great frailty. Comfort yourself. Go to the house of women, and cheer them with dance and song. It is most likely I shall not present myself for audience in the little house, but I must ponder these things alone, and as a grown man come to some compromise with my thoughts. How to reconcile one wisdom with the other, neither offending the mistress, nor yet being disloyal to either the living or the dead, or... But that you cannot understand, for to you children here below, the third is contained in the second. Your dead are gods, and your gods are dead, and you know not what that is, the living God. Thus Joseph, condescendingly, to the wizened little man. Yet knew he not that he, Joseph, was dead and deified, O Sarsif, in other words. It was to ponder all these things that he would be alone, alone, too, with a thought inevitably bound up with them, the thought of the god in deathly readiness, rigidly awaiting the vulture woman.